One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and for a breakdown looking at a whole load of news, thoughts, opinions, and questions, I have once again joining me Dan. Dan, welcome.
Howdy, howdy.
It's very dark where you are.
Yeah, do you want me to put an extra light on, or is it okay?
I mean, I don't care. I mean, for anyone on audio, it won't make a difference to lighting conditions, but...
yeah, just...
on YouTube, Dan's in that dark room, yeah. I suggest stick on some candles, some mood lighting, and enjoy. What we'll do is, there's a lot of news topics to go through, and I've literally just told Dan this as he's joined, that I'd made some notes on some basic things, and then when I put out for questions on Patreon and YouTube and stuff, loads of people sent in basically what I had down, but then more discussion points as well. And I thought, rather than give myself loads of work and format all this and do what I should do, let's just go through all the questions and answer them, because it pretty much covers everything, I think, anyway. Yeah. And yeah, we should hit the points.
And it's been a pretty busy week with a lot of appearances with Lou in different places and stuff.
Yeah,
so
I was about to say that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's hard to kind of keep up, where even like this afternoon, another Lou Elizondo interview happened with Julian Doré on that podcast.
Three and a half hours, right?
Yeah. So probably saturated with the Lou appearances at this point. However, we'll get through some stuff, because there is a big talking point a few people asked to bring up off the back of some stuff Lou has said. So, but yeah, Lou's still doing the rounds and some of the big mainstream things, which we'll get to. We will get to. But Dan, we'll kick off with Mark. Okay, we won't kick off with him. We'll say thank you to Mark. but Mark says this: something that occurred to me the other day is what a contrast there is between both Carl Nell's unequivocal statements at SALT conference, Lou Elizondo's clear statements, and Chris Mellon's "we don't know what this stuff is" kind of vibe. I'm trying to work out, is this just Chris using a gently demeanour to make a politically acceptable statement, or whether there's an actual difference in level of conviction? So folks, what he's getting at there is that Carl Nell was very much unequivocal: there is a non-human intelligence, we have aliens, blah blah blah. Lou Elizondo, I don't think, could be much clearer as to Roswell was real, Rendlesham happened, we've got craft, we've got bodies, you know, very much saying it as it is. But Chris Mellon still has stayed at a certain line, Dan. Would you say that's fair and not necessarily jumped over it? And he might be leaning over the line.
Yeah, but I would say that's fair. There's been like moments where, like at the end of Unidentified, He got a little wistful, kind of talking about what it would mean for us if we encountered something from elsewhere. But I think that's about as close as he's got. And I can't help but feel maybe that's his government background coming into play.
Do you think so? I was going to ask why when everyone else is coming out and saying this stuff, because Nell's got a pretty highly credentialed background. Lou's got a highly credentialed background. Grush has a highly credentialed background. Who was that guy, McMaster, H.R. McMaster, the other week?
McMaster, yeah. Super credentialed as well.
More and more of them are coming out and saying really similar things, that, you know, there's something to this, blah, 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 blah. You know, more or less we're hearing now, and we'll get to it, there are aliens, which is the statements we're getting to. Mellon still seems to be just holding his position. And you would have to think that's for a reason. If you had to speculate, though, and give like a definite answer now, what would you think it is?
I would lean towards Mellon's always kind of been not vague, but he's left that I don't know open. And all of his kind of op-eds and blog posts and interviews and things like that are aimed at a very specific audience that may not be comfortable with this kind of stuff. So I wonder if he's kind of remaining in that space so he can bring people that just say it's not aliens kind of into the conversation on more of a national security angle, as opposed to, you know, well, this week we had the guy screaming aliens at Lou, right? And yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And no, I agree with you that Chris Mellon seems to really stick to that. It's national security. It could be adversarial, although he does mention, you know, I don't think so based on X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
It's like he's leaving all options on the table, but he's also quite clearly said, and I think he said in as many words, you know, the alien non-human extraterrestrial hypothesis is also on the table. You can't take it off. So like you say, is it just he's inviting those larger conversations with folks who we may never even hear their names mentioned in a public setting, but in the backgrounds might be coming forward, kind of movers and shakers, people who are like captains of industry, if you want to call it that, who are maybe saying, you know, Chris, you know, what the hell are you talking about with this alien stuff? And he's just, like you say, maybe opening that door to say, look, come and have a chat. I'm not putting myself way out there. You don't have to either. Let me speak to you, though, and then maybe see what happens.
Yeah, and Chris hasn't been someone either that's kind of, you know, I know he helped with getting, you know, the gimbal and the Tic Tac and the Flea video out, but he doesn't have experience working behind the scenes with this kind of stuff. You know, Lou kind of speaks about working, looking at data and analyzing it and being convinced beyond a doubt. Nell is the same, Grush is the same, whereas Mellon's kind of brought into the conversation and is willing to go to bat for them. So he doesn't have that kind of, I don't know, same level of conviction that the ET or alien or something like that. So he's more like, I guess, us, who just have to throw our hands up and say, I don't know. And also seeing someone of his caliber saying, I don't know, is really valuable as well.
Yeah, no, I can go with that. So we've mentioned that we've touched on the Lou thing a few times, and I think it makes sense to bring this in here. So Christian from Kill the Stigma podcast over on YouTube, folks, I'll give Christian another plug for free. Any more of those, Christian, I'm charging you for them, though. go and check it out. Christian started a podcast, and he's been in touch with the pod and myself for a long time now, and it's good to see him get that up and running, just sharing his thoughts over there on YouTube. So keep it going, mate. He says, it does seem to me that mainstream media is now being way more serious about this topic since Lou Elizondo's book. For those who got mad at The Daily Show, I don't believe it's comedy. I believe don't is comedy. Maybe I don't believe it's comedy. But either way, my question to Dan and Andy is, personally, would you rather have catastrophic disclosure or controlled disclosure? Second question, putting your needs and wants aside, if you were president, would you disclose? If so, how? Would it be honest? Let's go with the first one, okay, Dan? So first question, would you rather have catastrophic disclosure or controlled?
My question would be controlled for who? When this kind of the phrases were presented, Carnell was very much vouching for control for the US government, a controlled rollout, the way they get the say on what to do. If you look at controlled disclosure in China or in Russia, there are different needs for those places. So control for me is really vague. It's a really specific thing. Can we go with catastrophically controlled? And what I mean by that is, I would love for the aliens to, for the non-human intelligence alien to us, that's all I meant, to just appear in the skies, a la something like Phoenix Lights or something like that, just in a completely undeniable way. I think many people could handle it. But then again, some places might not. Catastrophic controlled is kind of pulling the Band-Aid off to me and just having to deal with the fact that they're here. It would be quick, it would be brutal, but, you know, get in at the deep end. Why not?
I would go for controlled because just looking big picture, I don't think the planet and people and humanity, you can look at the UFO community, quote unquote, and say, yeah, we're ready for it. I would just guess at least 50% actually aren't and would shit their pants if there was a genuine confirmation disclosure. And that includes probably some of the UFO celebrities, whatever you want to call them, influencers who would genuinely have it hit them that you're not just talking about this thing anymore. It's not just fantasy. Shit, this is real. If there was a three-body problem type scenario, Dan, I reckon genuinely 50. And do you know what? I might have to put myself in that category. I don't think you would know until it happened. I think it's one of those where you could say, yeah, I'd be fine with it. But when that reality hits you and you see that 6 o'clock news bulletin with bang, there's the craft, it's on its way, and we'll get to that in a minute. Here's the bodies, or here's the aliens shaking the president's hand. Whatever it is.
Like the signs videos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that will just hit differently, as the kids would say. And I don't think a lot of people, even the ones that say so, would be ready for that. So I think controlled over a period of time would be the best way to go. And I'll go back to my old James Webb thing, you know, that if they pick something up and then slowly, oh, we've found something somewhere else and it becomes something, and then we find techno signatures somewhere else. But we can't get to it for a few years. We could send a probe. But as soon as you start acknowledging those types of things, it opens up the conversation more publicly now to, okay, there might be aliens out there, but does that mean they're here already, or something's been coming here? Is there something to Roswell? And the public start asking all those types of questions, and the conversation totally changes overnight still for me. But I think that can roll out over years, and I think it would be the best way to go without, like I say, the general public shitting their pants.
So control for you then is more kind of baby steps in general, as opposed to control for a specific country. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, control, as in I think it would be, it's almost damage limitation.
Sure.
Because there's still going to be that shock, there's still going to be issues, there's still going to be unrest in some way, shape or form. There'll still be social media claiming all kinds of conspiracy theories anyway. It doesn't matter anymore with social media what it is that'll happen. But yeah, it's damage limitation, and controlled for me is just ripping the Band-Aid off, but very slowly. It's still going to hurt, but you're spreading the pain out over a longer time. I think that would be the best way to do it.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, I mean, control doesn't have to be human-controlled, right? If we went to another planet and we found another species on another planet, we could kind of go, we don't want to send our armada or ships down. Maybe we just kind of look at rural areas and we reveal ourselves to one or two people and just gauge the reaction. And then if that goes well, we kind of steadily interact a little bit more. And as they become more technological and reach into the air and into space, they encounter us more and more. And, you know, kind of, I think Star Trek did a kind of similar thing where, you know, they wouldn't interfere. They would just be a presence. And then the more advanced the society got, the more they would talk to them, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And just to say, listeners, you know, might kind of be screaming at the whatever they're listening to right now, kind of going, that sounds like us. And that's kind of my point. It does sound like, you know, when you look at the history of the phenomena, that this is exactly what might be occurring. We might be getting like little drips and drabs until we become accustomed with this. And now we're reaching into space. Hello, here they are, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sorry if I missed that. I've been literally moving some questions about just as you've been discussing this. But the idea that controlled disclosure could be from the other side, not ours. So whatever this intelligence or phenomenon represents or is, could be doing the controlling. And that's how it's being kind of rolled out from that point of view. Yeah.
That would be my option, I think, for them to steadily... I'm going to change my answer.
but even then, right, so does that then not either mean... Or you would have to assume there's one species involved in this at all. There's one species in charge of this, or there's a group of species who are all deciding this should happen at this time, or one species is breaking rank and going, you know, fuck it, let's tell them. Like, all that conversation starts up then.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. It brings to mind that Nuremberg woodcut from, I think it was the 1600s, I can't remember the date exactly, maybe the 1500s, where they kind of have the spheres and the long cigar shapes in the sky, and there were reports of this kind of battle going on in the sky. Maybe one side wanted to reveal themselves and the other side didn't. We just don't know, because we don't know the intent.
So that second question from Christian, putting your needs and wants aside, if you were president, would you disclose? If so, how? Would it be an honest disclosure? So, Dan, you're the president of the world, let's say. How are you hello. How are you disclosing?
Well, one, I would hope that I could channel Bill Pullman in Independence Day and kind of hit that really inspirational, you know, big moment. But also, I think, just ladies and gentlemen, we are not alone. Just an announcement of that and leave people to simmer on it for a while. And then after a few weeks, maybe 1 week, maybe two, come back with scientists who can answer more questions after it's been digested a little bit, especially if we're not in any immediate danger with it and we've got time to kind of process it and understand it so that people aren't running out and buying mass amounts of toilet paper.
Yeah. If I have a little bit of fun with that question, I'll stick to my own theme, but I think I would go to NASA or the European Space Agency, who is NASA's bastard little brother, and be like, look, who's in charge here? And I mean of the really good stuff. Where are the airbrushed pictures? Where are the good videos of the stuff that you're finding up there that you're hiding? And I would be like, we need to use this and say, look, over the years, we've collected some data. After some research, we think there's something potentially visiting, blah, 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 and still do a bit of a slower rollout. I wouldn't go for the we're not alone straight away, but I would try and do the let's roll this out. And I think it makes sense to do that whole they are discovering, and I say they, the government, are discovering this along with us almost, that they've not been hiding it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that stops that whole... You hear a clamour on social media, don't you, for... like trials for people who were involved in covering up Roswell and various different aspects of the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah.
I just feel all that becomes totally pointless when you're discussing this kind of, like, you know, reality of a disclosure scenario. If people are interested in those kind of disclosure type scenarios, I suggest a book by Richard Dolan and Bryce Zabel titled AD.
They wrote
After
a book together.
What? They did. Yes, co-authored. So yeah, I think they're actually doing a follow-up, aren't they?
After disclosure.
Yeah. AD.
The day after tomorrow. AD, yeah.
The day after disclosure is a pretty cool title. Yeah. So, yeah, that for me, how I would do it. Still over a time scale. I think ripping the Band-Aid off is not going to happen. I don't think I would like an Independence Day type scenario of shit, they're here, you know, something's invading. And again, I think we'll get to that. But yeah, I'd go with that. So fair question, good answers.
Yeah, Dan, good questions.
We've mentioned the Lou Elizondo interview and touched on it. So part of the news, folks, just the way we're doing it on this show, Luis Elizondo has done a whole load of mainstream media interviews. And I think he's interviewed recently that caught the eye, caught the ear, caught the nose, whatever it was on The Daily Show. So traditionally it's hosted by Jon Stewart. What was the guy's name who hosted, Dan? Do you have it?
I can find it.
Yeah, but it was a stand-in host who just Jon Stewart's got the week off type thing.
Show... it's not. So Jon Stewart left the show ages ago.
Oh,
And he comes back and he only does one day a week now.
Trevor Noah took over and he's left, hasn't he?
That's right, yeah. So there's a whole host of kind of other people that have been running it. Right. Jon Stewart, he does one day a week. So if anyone was wondering why Jon Stewart didn't interview Lou, it wasn't his day, which is unfortunate. I think they'd have an extremely enlightening conversation, but that might still be ahead of us.
Listen, you might turn up to a theatre show on the West End or on Broadway, and you're looking forward to seeing David Hyde Pierce in the role of his life, and that night he's ill, and the stand-in comes on, and it could be John Lithgow. Do you know what? You're still going to have a great time. You're still going to enjoy the show, etc., etc. I know a few folk were disappointed with that. I don't think that was anything nefarious, Dan, or the UFO guy. Let's give him the lesser host. That wasn't the case, was it?
No, not at all.
We've got a few questions and a few opinions on that appearance, so Dan. It's a massive show with a huge demographic and a different demographic, perhaps, to some of the stuff that Lou has been doing. Silvio Pena, we'll start with that one. Do you all agree that Lou Elizondo's interview on The Tonight Show represents a huge step forward? I'd love to see a graph of his book sales alongside significant events like that interview. One, I don't think his publishing company will release graphs of book sales. They'll keep that private, probably. But I don't doubt that there are spikes based off of these big appearances, like Rogan, like Daily Show. Yeah, more so even, I think, than maybe a podcast will. Those are some big milestone or keystone, whatever you want to call them, moments.
You could look up the Google Trends, I guess, right? Of people searching Lou Elizondo's names. I think that
probably
that would kind of give
probably
you
a good shout, yeah. And that would no doubt correlate with any book sales.
Yeah, exactly. And there was actually a hilarious moment in the interview where after, you know, they'd had the conversations, which we'll get into, but right at the end when the guy who's just like, Ronnie, his name was Ronnie, I'm going to mess up the pronunciation, Kang? Kyung? But he just said at the end, like, oh, yeah, and you've got a book. And it was very apparent that by that point that Ronnie felt like the book was small fry. It was kind of beside the point, given how much his mind had been blown up to that point.
What did you think of the... So I've watched the show before, and I know you have, okay? Mm-hmm. And there was some talk online about the tone. But it's a current affairs show, but it's got a comedy tone, it's a comedy theme. They will laugh at any and every topic, no matter how serious it's meant to be. So I don't think that should have been unexpected for anyone who knows the show, but for other folks, they might have been disappointed that they're laughing at the UFO topic. They would have laughed at anything because that's the point of the show. But I think we've said before, Dan, you've got to be able to present this topic to a whole host of different groups and people and bring them into the conversation, because I don't doubt of the, how was it, 6 million roughly that show gets, something like that.
Yeah.
And even then, I think TV figures are totally irrelevant these days, because clips then go online for a show that gets 5 million viewers, quote unquote. Nielsen diaries are really, really outdated now and can't even be described as totally accurate. But they then get 50 million views online. So does that 13 or 14 minute interview Lou's done actually matter, or does a couple of clips going online make the difference where they're seen by an audience of 10 or 20 or 30 times more because they search those out? So yeah, I think it was a big step forward, and I love seeing these types of conversations had with different audiences. The same way when you see Adam Sandler do a role that's not comedy. Big shout to Rain Over Me, great movie for anyone who's not watched it. But you see people stepping out their comfort zone and doing something different. Thought Lou Elizondo handled the interview well. He hit the big, he sung the classics. If it was a gig, you know, he hit the notes of, you know, NHI, military installations being, you know, and these things are running all over them with impunity. Not our tech. What
Money
were some
boots.
Of the Yeah, what are some of the key for you there, Dan? Key call outs, even.
Yeah, it was really interesting for me. Very similar to the John Oliver segment in terms of the tone. You know, we can talk about serious things, but then we're going to have a laugh about it and just bring some levity to it so that people don't run around with their hair on fire. But I think Ronnie, the host, kind of responded how most people would respond to this. You know, Lou was talking about paperwork at one point and how we're going to progress the issue through paperwork. And Ronnie just stopped him and said, you're talking about paperwork. I'm talking about aliens, and just really tried to drive it home, because that's what people are going to be taking away from it. They're not going to give a shit about the paperwork and the bureaucracy and the history and the court dates and yada, 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 you know? I heard some people complain about the comedy, but it is a satire show. This is just what we're dealing with. Yeah. And it's a really good way to kind of package these things. In the UK, people would be familiar with Carl Pilkington and Ricky Gervais. They do the same kind of thing. And it's kind of deceptively intelligent to do, because you have to kind of distill it down to those finer points and know how it's going to be received by people. And it was honestly, for me, it was a moment where they didn't laugh at Lou, they didn't laugh at the subject, they laughed with Lou, and they laughed with us. And it made me a little bit giddy when I was watching it, because it felt like a moment where it just reached the mainstream. And I think I messaged you after I watched it, and I just said, that's it, it's left the small UFO community now. Like, it's out in the world, and we're no longer having these conversations in little shadowy rooms or hushed tones, or just UFO conventions. We actually get to enjoy this with people now. And I sent it to my mom, and she showed her all her friends in work, and they had a good giggle watching it. And I don't think they're going to stew on it for weeks on end, but no, they've heard so much more than they did before that moment. You know, it was very accessible, very concise, really enjoyable. We got in, like, Roswell was real. They were talking about the tech, and Ronnie said, you know, why are they looking at iPhone 16? They've got technology that brought them across the stars. And Lou got into the kind of nuclear stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then it came up, Lou mentioned, you know, and again, in this subject, it's so hard to remember the names of all the people that kind of touched the subject, right? There are so many and so often that it at this point, if you kind of went onto a website, I know there are some out there that compile quotes from officials and stuff like that, there are almost too many now. So Lou at one point just said a former president is involved in this, a former director of national intelligence, a former CIA director. We don't need to know their names. That's
just the headline
point. Yeah, that's the headline, right? There was a really great moment as well where Ronnie asked, you know, Is it that Donald Trump hating Taylor Swift is burying this news in the cycle? And Lou got to talk about, you know, how the media kind of does this thing. And we, you know, we've spoken about this before as well. And it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, if the president stood there and said, we are not alone, by the end of the week, people would be bickering about, you know, other things. I was going to use Taylor Swift example again, she's been rocking UFO dresses, by the way, again, out there to her fans. And we know what the Swifties are like. Won't say a bad word against them, because I value my life.
Can I just pick up though something you said before I forget?
Yes, go for
right at the start of your opening monologue there, when you mentioned your mum showed it to her friends, like the video, and you said they're not going to stew on it for weeks. But I think that's really important. So I don't think this is breaking the dam in the UFO conversation. I don't think, you're right that it's out there in the mainstream, but I don't think it's now a big mainstream conversation that's going to stay there. But what I'd like to think is that it means the next time, if you get a Jay Stratton on that show, or you get an Eric Davies on that show, or you get a Bob Lazar, or you get a David Grush, people start to go, oh, there's another UFO guy on. There's another UFO guy on. And it just adds weight to the story, that it's kind of knocking the door down more and more and more, to the point I think you will get that break in the dam. But I think you're right. It's like a build. And again, I think that hopefully is to my point about trying to build this up. If you were going to have different pillars or ways to attack this conversation to get it out to the public, this looks to me like a good way to do it. That Lou Elizondo right now for this media sprint, it might seem it's been going on forever, but it's only actually been a few weeks. When this stops in the coming weeks, it'll have been a short, sharp blast into the media. And then it's what follows up on that. So can James Fox's documentary have an impact? Will we get a David Grush op-ed or a book announcement properly? What's next along the line? Do those hearings happen in September? Do we get them in November? Do they happen at all, just with everything that's going on? The elections are going to take over. How does momentum keep going? Or it could be that this is just the peak of the roller coaster again, and we're due another dip in the cycle before it picks back up again, because that's what happens or has happened in the UFO topic. Do you know, Dan, I wanted to share this with you. I was going to say, I was just speaking to Darcy Weir about his Transmedium documentary, and I was running out of time because we have to come on and record, so peek behind the curtain, folks. And I was thinking disclosure as a process, right? I know it's different for lots of different people, but it reminds me of like the end of Inception. And you know, when like he spins his little totem and the camera, sorry, spoilers folks for Inception, right? But it's been out for years. Go and watch it.
I guess if you haven't seen it, this won't mean anything at all. So
it won't really ruin the movie for you. He spins his little totem and the whole thing is, does it fall over or will it keep spinning? And I think disclosure for different people, you could watch that and you might watch it and go, yeah, it falls over. I might watch it and go, nah, that's going to keep spinning. Or the Sopranos ending.
See, for me, the end of Inception, I was left with a different thing.
Go on.
Which is interesting that you've said, I think the question that they leave you with, and sorry, just to bring up something we spoke about the other day as well, where Tom DeLonge said, oftentimes you'll be left with two questions, but really it's the third one. I'm not saying that mine was the correct one. Any of them could be the correct one. But falls or stays up aren't the only options. My takeaway from it is that it doesn't matter. That character no longer cares whether it falls over, and that's the point.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of says to your what you were getting at, that by some point, people will just accept this as fact and they'll just go about their lives. Kind of, I think we've used the analogy before of a lobster in boiling water.
Yeah.
It boils little by little over time until eventually it's happening and that's it.
Yeah, no, that's very, very fair. A comment on the Lou interview from Ozzy from Gozzy. I'm glad Lou was on the Tonight Show, but they owe him an apology for how little respect he was paid. He could barely get a word in with the host, screaming alien 20 or more times. I appreciate and love comedy, but did not find that host funny at all. I think the host's style of humour or comedy may not be for everyone. That's just comedy, but yeah. We've addressed that, haven't we? That you might like it, you might hate it. I think, regardless, I've just liked seeing the UFO conversation represented in a respectful way, which Lou Elizondo does, whether you like him or not. He's represented the conversation well in front of a different audience again. And that can only benefit anyone with an interest in the UFO topic. That will benefit. And I'll even include the extremes of, one, pro-disclosure groups, or whatever you want to call them, people with podcasts, whatever you want to call, or bloggers. Even if you go to the extremes, and I'm not in the Stephen Greer camp, but people will have seen that interview, looked up the UFO topic online and found Stephen Greer. They'll have found his documentaries. They'll have found the CE5 app. People will have found Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp's podcast or Jeremy Corbell's documentaries, people's books, James Fox's documentaries. And they'll now be sitting going through a little bit of I'm getting into this UFO topic. So it doesn't really matter about ultimately the platform and the way it's presented. It will get folks into the topic. You can argue about how many folks, depending on how it's presented or how well it goes, but I think that went pretty well.
Just to speak to that bit with mentioning disrespecting Lou as well, Lou had a great time, and I think that showed on the piece as well. He was smiling, he was joking, he's a funny guy. It's nice to see him relax.
Funny guy, yeah, Lou, funny how?
Funny how? Just jokes. Jokes up the wazoo, and he doesn't really often get the chance to kind of say them because everything's really serious right when he has the conversations, whereas here he punted quite a few jokes out there, and it was nice to see just a normal person in front of the camera. There's no need for it to be so stodgy. I mean, Disney at this point have almost made billions and billions and billions off having serious moments followed by jokes, and to the point where people are like, oh, you undercut that moment. But it works, it gets into people's heads. One more thing to mention from this interview for me was the host kind of saying, out of all the things that they'd spoken about during that interview, he said the craziest thing here is that liberals and conservatives are working together. I think that's a really great message to put out, especially as the election's coming up and the campaign trail's being hit. People are loggerheads and are at the extremes, but we can achieve miracles when we work together. And I think it was a nice little reminder of, not everything has to be contestable and emotions flying and stuff like that.
Have you seen Goodfellas before, Dan?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. When I said funny guy, funny how, that's what I was
getting. Oh, nice.
I love how you answered anyway, though.
Sorry, this is...
yeah.
I was monologuing again, wasn't I?
Yeah, a few folks might have been like, oh, Goodfellas. Other folks, maybe not so much. But folks, that is a little bit of comedy and with the UFO topic. So thank you. Hope you enjoyed.
So disrespectful.
I know. Damn me. Steve asks or says, I'm wondering if Andy and Dan can talk about an apparent tension between disclosure being imminent and already started versus the process of disclosure being a marathon, not a sprint, and similar thoughts. It seems we're getting mixed messages from the people who are promoting the disclosure narrative. Totally fair point. I think you do get mixed messages, not just from various different groups, Dan, but I think just in general, individuals, and this is just a human thing, change their mind or get stuff wrong or through no fault of their own get a little bit mixed up. So I think it very much speaks to what we said before, Dan, what you said about disclosure means different things to different people. It might be the third option for them. It might be the fourth option for them. For some folks, you could say, you know, I've had my disclosure because I had a sighting. But you know what? Within years of misinformation or disappointment in government progress and whatnot, maybe for them, actually, disclosure hasn't happened. That could change. That could be fluid or vice versa. So where do you stand on that, Dan, with kind of mixed messages and disclosure being here or not here yet?
I would say pretty much the same thing. When people say the word disclosure, they don't mean the same thing. When people hear the word disclosure, they don't hear the same thing. People go back and forth on it. And I guess it's not a meaty answer, but you know, I think even between us, it would probably be different things. Like I'm really feeling these days that it's happened and is happening. And we're just kind of going slowly. And those paying attention very much have gotten the message already. You know, it's almost like, all right, shut up, let's go on to the next bit. But there are still people that they're trying to reach with disclosure at a really basic level. And The Daily Show, I think the main takeaway that people would take from it, it's a mouthful, would be that it is real, whatever it is. And that seems to be the bottom line of all of the media that Lou's hitting. So, you know, acclimatize yourself to that. If you want to know about the government history and all of the ins and outs there over, you know, since Roswell or beyond, then disclosure hasn't been reached for you. Whereas if you just want someone official, someone with weight to say, we are not alone, it's happened. We're there already. So we kind of have to remember that disclosure is not all things to all people or one thing to all people.
Yeah. And you know, and that's why I'm really happy to see when there are more documentaries coming out, more books coming out, more podcasts, more Twitter accounts picking up tens of thousands of followers or hundreds of thousands of followers, more Hollywood movies coming out, Steven Spielberg getting back on the ET train, you know, all that kind of stuff. You can look and go, oh, they're just remaking the same old, same old. They're writing the same old, same old. But for a lot of folks, they've not heard this stuff before. They've not seen this stuff before. And regarding, let's just pick a book, for example, not everyone's going to say, oh, I'm going to go read Stanton Friedman or Jacques Vallée's work from 1970 or 1980, right? So they will want to pick up something new, something fresh, and something that covers a lot of the modern stuff that maybe some folks listening or viewing this would say they've heard a lot of, the Tic Tac, for example. But there's so many folks out there who haven't heard of it and don't know about it yet. A lot more haven't than have. That's just a fact. So I think you have to remember there's a whole load of folks getting involved, like you say, in the topic. And even if all these Lou Elizondo appearances, they don't all stay involved, if the message he lands gets enough people going, maybe there's something to it, and they just start to look, that's a win. And I think that's where momentum's really important and just the whole conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just add in onto that it seems that no one actually has an answer on this. The more we find out, the more it seems that even if there is a legacy UAP program going way back, it doesn't seem like they've kind of figured out much of anything. You know, maybe 40, 50%, I don't know, but just not everything. And so bringing more people into the conversation, probably. But bringing more people into the conversation means there's more points of view on it. There's more people with different experiences talking about this. There is a bigger data pile, there are more opinions, and it touches on that elephant in a dark room with people grabbing different bits of it. we need everyone on this, because there is no singular person that has been like an Einstein that can figure this out and have a aha moment. It seems to be that we all have a puzzle piece, and that's countries, that's us, that's experiences. So we need everyone involved in this, not just to figure it out, but also to move forward.
Paul, I'm going to skip your question, mate. Thank you so much for it, but we have covered that in everything we've kind of said so far, so I appreciate it. Aaron follows up, Dan, on something we've kind of touched on just before. With elections in the US just weeks away, and we're recording this the kind of 19th of September, folks, so just to give you a bit of a date, 2024 for those in the future. Hello, hope we're still alive. Could be like a kind of Last of Us type scenario, and people like literally have found an old iPod or something, and
Maybe. Hello, if that's you.
Yeah. With elections in the US just weeks away, do you believe certain candidates prioritize free speech on Twitter? God, I never read this question beforehand. One candidate has publicly supported censoring misinformation, while another champions free expression. This question arises from California's recent decision to begin censoring social media content. I'm already regretting reading this, Dan, in full. What impact do you think this will have on our UAP investigative and journalistic community's ability to discuss ongoing government investigations? It could significantly hinder our capacity to criticise organisations like ADO, the CIA, the Pentagon, among others. Dan, I'm going to censor you here and say we'll keep this in and answer it, but can we keep any political leanings or opinion out of this?
Yes, of course.
For the love of God, it's not worth it. Let me start on this one then, since I've came at you quite a lot first. I see in all areas of politics, and this isn't me being a politician sitting on the fence, they all lie, they all make mistakes, they all bullshit. This is the US, the UK, Brazil, and everywhere else. And there is loads of misinformation from all sides. You can lean whichever way you want. Fantastic, good for you. However, I just think the media right now is a huge, and that includes social media, a huge source of manipulation for all sides of so many different arguments. You just have to look at COVID for a really recent big example of that, that still rumbles on now. And any incident that happens anywhere, suddenly there's 100 different theories as to how and why it's happened. And social media just run with them, depending on the kind of camps you're in. So it's, I totally get the question. But regarding, do you think the question arises from the what impact will it have on our UAP investigative and journalistic community's ability to discuss? I don't know. X is the biggest platform for those conversations right now. Will people hang around? Don't know. Heard everyone was leaving it before and they didn't. But you know, Elon Musk makes a lot of drastic changes to it. For me, that mute and block button coming our way would be a huge moment where I may decide, you know what, just post podcast updates and stay away from the conversation. People have options now. I don't think you can take it away or censor it, Dan. I think I'm waffling a bit here now, but yeah, social media is a dumpster fire. A fun one, but it's a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I would agree. The question's an interesting one, because the way the people were described, and I'm not going to use names, but I think it's interesting because you could almost, it works for both kind of candidates that are running, right? You can kind of switch them around, and in certain times and on certain issues, they've both indulged in this kind of stuff. And, you know, you can't, it's almost impossible to just say that only one person has done it. Like you said, they're human and they make mistakes and they're kind of pushing different buttons and so on and so forth. What it made me think of, though, was Arrow and Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick. At one point in an interview, he suggested that talk of conspiracy theories was dangerous and that maybe, you know, it should be stopped, that people should be censored, i.e. kind of saying that people that talk about UFOs should be censored and stopped from talking about them. That would stop their ability to kind of figure this out. And I don't think that would have been helpful to treat people that are just interested in these subjects, not engage in, because he was talking from the point of view that someone rocked up to his house, right? And it was a stranger and he felt in danger, obviously. Like, that's not okay. But there's a line between don't act on these things and go to people and try and carry out consequences for things that are conspiracy theories, there's a line between that and just talking about it online, right? And, you know, as long as people aren't throwing out death threats and talking about violence and are just talking about the data and the material and so on and so forth, sticking to the subject, that's a good thing. But freedom of speech does not mean freedom of consequence. You have to take the good with the bad. You know, anyone can listen to this and disagree with us and send us a strongly worded email, right?
Well, do
you just have an email written saying, oh, I'm sorry, your email's bounced, but it just sounds official, so they think
that's I delete not. It before it's even popped up with the notification. If I see even in the subject line, they've disagreed with me, then it's gone. It's absolutely gone. So, but no, you're right. You're right.
And then just to throw into all this as well, to take the human out of it entirely, we've now have AI and bots kind of taking over the internet. And I always try and remember when I feel like I'm getting heated online these days, I always try and remember that the person that I'm arguing with might not even be a real person. And it kind of makes you feel a little bit embarrassed. And like you say, you lean more on that block button then. And I'm certain there are casualties, you know, people who really actually want a conversation, but because, you know, we're getting inundated with bots, they get blocked. It's happened to me, you know, Sean Carroll, love the guy, love his work. I responded to him once whilst a bunch of people were having a go at him about UFO stuff. I really wanted a just normal, calm conversation with him. But because I was in that group, I got blocked. And that's that, unfortunately. There are other people out there. There are, you know, 8 billion people on the planet. There are plenty of people to talk to.
I hate most of them. No one that listens to this. But, yeah, I'm a people person. Life has ground me down. And I will just say, Dan, there are extremes on all sides of those conversations as well. There's people online who are literally just there to troll and wind people up. And do you know what? They just actually do it for a bit of fun, right or wrong. And they're just there to annoy people. And on the extreme of that, there's folks on the other side who think they're being helpful and think they're being kind and use lots of lovely hashtags. But they themselves are just as toxic as the folks on the other side. And then you've got everyone else in the middle who are just existing. So, yeah. Social media for
them. You've got to remember everyone is righteous, right? No one wakes up kind of going, oh, I'm going to be evil and twirling their moustache.
Although I'm leaning more towards that these days, I'm not going to lie, the more I go online. Little change of tone in the questions. Dan, James says, I thoroughly enjoyed the sequel to the Three Body Problem, The Dark Forest. I've been thinking about the Dark Forest theory for months and how it provides a perfect solution to the Fermi paradox. It's also a really interesting theory to ruminate on. Have you noticed anyone talking about Dark Forest theory? I feel this should at least take up some of the conversation, and yet I don't see it being mentioned much at all. The end principle always seems to be other beings extinguishing the lights of any other beings they find in the forest. Should we not be more conscious or concerned of our emissions into space as a species? Do you want to sum up what Dark Forest theory is, Dan, briefly?
Yeah, so the idea, it's not, I know people call it a theory. It's a theory in the world of the book. It's not really a theory. It's an idea. And the idea is that if we kind of show ourselves to another species, that the logical thing for that species to do is to wipe us out. And the reason for that is because eventually we will be vying for the same resources, for the same space as our species grows. So in order to protect ourselves, we should shoot first. I.e., you know, you're kind of sitting in a dark forest with a sniper rifle, and if you see movement, you're taking it out. For me, it's a really negative way of looking at the universe. And if you read the third book, it isn't so glum. People are aware of it, but the dark forest move is seen as a chump move. You know, it's like kind of when you play computer games and someone just sits in a sniper position, just wiping everyone out. It ruins the fun for everybody.
That's absolutely
I've done it. Unreal Tournament 90s.
Yeah, that is me in Call of Duty, I'm sorry. But I get really panicky when I play the game. So when people run around a corner, I get really frightened still when I get shot. So I tend to find a space and just camp.
But that's the thing, right? Logically, if you're kind of emphasizing protection and defense, that's what you're going to do. But just like Lou said at the Daily Show, you shouldn't shoot at these things with guns. You don't recommend it because you're going to invite challenge that way. So the better thing to do is to plan for the worst, hope for the best. And it's a really courageous thing to have to do as well, to not do that move. And a lot of places talk about it. I've seen some papers kind of digging into it. I know Robin Hansen came on to talk to you, and he's kind of, what's his theory? Grabby aliens. That
grabby
was
aliens,
it.
Yeah.
About, you know, how they would expand, and if they expanded at a certain rate and so on and so forth, then we should see them by now. And, you know, Robin, we do. But, yeah, it's kind of a pessimistic outlook on things. And like I said, if you read the third book, by the end of the third book, there's more of a kind of spoilers, but more of a emphasis on trade and being kind and working together. And there are groups out there that do that. Yeah. And I would even say that in the first book, in Three Body Problem, there's a chapter, I don't think they really touched on it in the show, but there's a chapter where a species sees us. And, oh no, So they do touch on it in the show, in all the shows, but in the book they do it from the point of view of the alien being, but in the show we haven't seen the alien being, so they couldn't do it. We just see the messages that they're sending to the main character, who presses the button to say, come here and take the planet from us. But that alien that she initially speaks to says, be quiet. He tries to help. He tries to help us. So we can't assume malice on part of another species or multiple species or even individuals within a species. We kind of have to do the brave thing. And like I said, plan for the worst, plan for the best, and see how it goes.
We're going to end up with an alien equivalent of a planet of online trolls, aren't we? Visiting, yeah. So,
yeah, probably.
So I think a good follow-up question to that would be from Craig. Craig had sent in a few more questions that we'll get to, but I'm eagerly awaiting your thoughts on the new revelation. The James Webb Telescope has picked up a large structure moving towards Earth. Arrival date 2033 or 2034. Elizondo was asked about it and said he's aware, but it's not my story to tell. Apparently it's changing course, directions and speeds, Dan.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.